Welcome to this edition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and today I get to interview Jessica Leck, fellow fitness professional here in Indianapolis. Jessica shares her story from how she got into fitness to becoming a bodybuilder to having a daughter get diagnosed with cancer to opening her own studio where she now has a body-inclusive approach, and she really takes this intuitive approach from fitness, knowing how it's affected her own journey, and tries to implement that while training others. Now, get your tissues ready because this is definition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. Jessica and I got to share this tiny cozy space at the Hatch where I record all my podcast episodes, and we literally were drinking coffee, chatting about these things, and it made me so happy. So I really think you're going to enjoy today's episode. As always, don't forget to subscribe. That's how we reach others. That's how we connect with like-minded individuals like you who are looking to get happier, healthier, stronger, and find their fierce. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fierce. Good morning, Jessica. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
So we are testing this new space, new mic, and this is really exciting because this is my first in-person interview outside of our old studio was Lauren's playroom. So this is exciting. This is like a big upgrade.
All right. Nice.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into training and just kind of your own background with fitness.
So after I had my daughter, I was 32 and I was staying at home a lot. I only worked 2 days a week back then. And so I had a lot of depression, anxiety, just from like not having a, you know, community where you go to work and you see friends all day. And so I started going to the Y to make friends. And I also, you know, wanted my body back, which now
baby bod
is laughable to say, but right. So I started going to the Y and I met a bunch of friends there and eventually started asking about like, well, maybe I want to teach group fitness. And the wellness director there was like, well, if you go get certified, I will hire you. So one of the aerobics instructors kind of took me under her wing. My group of friends came to the classes. I taught the first class. It was like so nerve-wracking. It was crazy.
What was the first class that you taught? I have to hear.
It was a step class. So it was just the warm-up. But it's so choreographed, you know, like choreographed stuff is really hard. Like I can teach a strength class really easy, but once you have to start counting and giving instructions and cueing, it gets a lot harder.
That's so funny. That was the same very first class that I had to teach was step aerobics.
Yeah.
And like you said, I think that's probably one of the most challenging classes, it's but so it's hard. Like baptism by fire, just go for it.
Right, yeah. So then I started teaching cycling because I had hurt my foot. I had really bad foot pain. And I thought, well, I'm going to hate cycling. But I ended up liking it quite a bit and becoming an instructor. And so then the wellness instructor says to me, well, here's the certification coming up for a personal trainer. I'll hire you on that if you get certified. So he gave me a lot of opportunity. And that's where my story started. Eventually, I got really into it. I went through like a phase where I was bodybuilding for about 4 years. And then I decided eventually at the Y, I got too big, I guess I should say. Like, I didn't have enough time for clients, so I ended up wanting to open my own gym. So that's where I am now, 2.5 years into that.
Wow. I love just hearing the stories, how people start. And like you said, there was somebody who just gave you an opportunity, right? And it's like you had no idea that you'd be here today with your own studio, your own programming. And I love that. That's awesome. Yeah.
And I was really, back then, I was really also miserable at my job. I was kind of staying there because they gave me health insurance and I was afraid to leave, but I also felt really trapped. And so it was just a bad cycle of, you know, anxiety and depression, couldn't sleep, wasn't exerting my energy anywhere. So it was like a beautiful thing when I said, I'm quitting that job and moving on, even though it was really scary. Like, I bawled the day that I did it. It was also like, I felt free.
Mm-hmm. Like, literally, I was just talking to people about this last night. Like, the physical, and what we're going to talk a lot more about kind of diet mentality and things like that later on, but how when you have that stress or anxiety of that big decision or something else that's going on in your life, you literally feel heavy.
Right.
You feel that weight on your chest. So
yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you started your own studio, but let's kind of backtrack a little bit. What was that like, you know, that period of time when you really got into bodybuilding, or you're at this one end of the spectrum where you're like, I'm not happy with my body. I need to find some community, anxiety, depression. Like, what was that shift like of going from getting into fitness and then to this other extreme?
So I just started, I was really into cardio and starting to dabble in weights. And then I was working out a lot, doing a ton of cardio. And obviously, if you don't do weights, you don't really see results. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try lifting weights. And I just saw such a huge change in my body and my muscle mass, and just feeling strong, like being able to do a pull-up, or work towards it even, is just an amazing feeling. And so I don't know how I got excited about bodybuilding, but I remember that I had my husband Photoshop my face on a bikini model on stage. Like,
that's hilarious.
Some random person on the internet, he Photoshopped my face on her and I hung it on the fridge. And so I looked at it for a while. And so eventually I just decided I'm going to hire a coach. I think everybody needs a coach. I still have a coach. If you want to hit a goal, you need someone with fresh eyes and, that can steer you in the right direction. So I hired a coach, and my workouts became, kind of what my life was centered around. So, but I really wanted it. Like, I was doing everything it took. Lifting, 6 days a week, cardio, 6 days a week. And eventually it got to, excessive, what I would see as excessive now. But I don't regret it. I had a goal and I reached it. And I did place well in all of my shows. And they're good memories. But also, like, it's something that I don't necessarily need to do again. Like, sometimes I feel like, oh, I could do that again. I should. But I know that it's kind of diet culture sneaking back in and telling me I need to be smaller, when really I feel the best that I ever have now that I found more balance. I was measuring every piece of food I ate. I was hungry a lot. I was taking some fat burners. And if you have a lot of caffeine or you've ever taken fat burners, you just get tense. Like, my teeth would hurt. I would be aggro, driving, road rage. Doesn't happen to everyone, I'm sure, but it did happen to me. And those are things, feelings that I don't want to have on a daily basis anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. I love that you say, I don't regret it, because I think that's so important to recognize, is that when we're looking back on kind of our history with food and exercise, like, that sounds like that's what you needed in that moment, right? It was like a way for you to latch onto something as like a goal, right? Accomplish that goal. And like, it sounds like there are so many other positives that came along with it.
I learned a lot during it. I think it was a huge confidence booster for me, because coming out of a job that I hated and that really had no upward movement for me to go in, I feel like, wow, I really did this. Like, now even looking back, sometimes I can't believe that I did it. And sometimes I think I couldn't do it again. It's like your mind, it's interesting. But it was a huge confidence booster for me that I could do anything that I wanted to do, which leads into me opening a business. Maybe if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have had the confidence to open my business. So I definitely got uncomfortable and learned so many things about myself.
Psst, it's me, Katie. And in case you haven't already noticed, I kind of care about you getting results. Now, I'm not talking about results as far as body fat composition or the number on the scale, but I'm talking about implementing the things that you are learning here each and every week. Head on over to Facebook and just search Fit Friends Tribe to request to join our group. This is a free Facebook community where we talk about the podcast episodes each week, and I give you action steps on how to implement what it is that we talked about, so that you're not just listening, learning, and absorbing information, But you're part of that top percent, that top 2% that actually takes action and changes their life. So facebook.com, search Fit Friends Tribe. I'm going to ask you a few questions to make sure you're not some weirdo from Antarctica, and we'll let you in. See you there. All right, back to the show.
So after you did the bodybuilding, you know, competitions, it sounds like you got a few under your belt. What was that like? Right? Because that's, you know, the smallest probably you've ever been as far as like body composition. What does that process look like, both physically and mentally, to kind of get back to your, you know, baseline or where it was that you were? And what was that like? And how was that, yeah, physically and mentally?
Well, I mean, luckily I had a good coach on my most recent shows. So I had one coach for my first show, and then I switched to a different guy, and he kind of reversed me out of the deprivation. And I didn't put on a ton of weight, but yeah, it's really hard at that point to not compare yourself to all the Instagram models and to all the people that you've been competing with. That was a really big challenge, but I did pretty well with it, I think, for the most part. And I didn't really gain a ton of weight like fast, you know, like I did it in a healthy way. And I put that in quotations because, you know, I was dieting so hard that I still did have to monitor what I was eating afterwards. And I don't know, it just kind of flowed into my personal training career.
Okay, so you left the YMCA, you started your own studio. Walk us through more opening your own studio. I mean, first of all, like you said, just having the confidence to start this new business adventure, not just new business, but, you know, that's not what your college degree was in. Like, how did you take that step?
Well, again, I just knew that I wasn't extremely happy. I mean, I was happy where I was, but like, I knew that I couldn't take any more clients, and I only had a certain amount of time, and I had people on a waiting list. And I thought, wow, this would be great if I just had my own place. And I don't know, like, where the thought came from. It just, like, popped into my head, and I started looking for spaces. And my husband also owns a small business, so we looked for a space that could house both of us in one building. And after, like, trial and error, you know, like, some upsets about not getting a certain space, we got the perfect spot. But I kind of went into it really naive. Like, I didn't know that it was going to be as busy as it is now. I thought I would just be doing a lot of one-on-one and maybe a little bit of small group. When I first started, my small group classes were like 3 to 6, and now they're like 12 to 16. So like, it's been just constant, you know, someone joins, they love it, they feel accepted, they bring their friends, and the right people end up showing up, and the people that maybe don't belong to be there right now end up leaving. And I don't really chase clients anymore. Like, I want people to want to come to my gym, and I feel like that energy is there.
That's so freeing as an entrepreneur, and I think especially in the fitness industry, and I can relate with that as well. There's this one side of the culture that's, you know, I think more diet culture, right? Is like, I will take anybody I can get,
right,
you know, to make a buck. But once you let go of that and go, no, this is who I need to take care of. This is
right.
Who needs to hear my message. The right people come. So your studio is called Trivergence Training. How did you come up with that name? And what is it that makes your studio a little bit different?
It's actually a name of one of the murals my husband painted. So there's a mural under the underpass where the Monon starts. And that's called Trivergence. It's where trails converge, three trails. So we were originally going to be really close to that mural. And I picked the name then, you know, went into the state and chose did all the business, all the paperwork. And then we ended up finding a different space. And, you know, kind of ties together my philosophy of movement, wellness, and mindset. And so that's kind of where the name came from. It's really hard to pick a business name. I mean, I really struggled with it. I was like, you know, you don't want it to sound too cheesy. And, you know, I picked one that's kind of hard to spell, but it's worked out okay.
It's working out in your favor so far.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more. How did you discover intuitive eating? Because I know that's an area that, side note, we're like sitting super close. This is definition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're like leaned in with our coffee cups right around this hot pink microphone. But we've connected a lot on kind of this intuitive eating approach. So How did you discover intuitive eating, and what has that process? Let's start with how it's been for you personally.
So after so much dieting, intuitive eating, really, I was like abrasive when I first heard about it. One of my friends, Lauren, she already knows that she's part of the story, so I'll just say her name. But my friend Lauren, who is a dietitian, her philosophy changed and she started posting things that were really making me uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I didn't like her message. I thought they were against me, like taking it personally. But she really started putting things out there. And at first I just really, you know, like I unfollowed her for a while.
What were some of the things that she was posting that just didn't sit well with you?
You know, macros are a diet. You don't need to restrict. You should trust your body. And at that point, like, I had so much control over my eating that talking about trusting my body, and even with my clients, I was still, like, giving them macros and meal plans, and it was a very foreign idea to me to think about slowing down and trusting and, you know, well, how do I know when I'm full? And listening to hunger cues, and how do I know when I should eat? Like, I was on, like, you're going to eat every 3 to 4 hours, and you're going to have 4 ounces of chicken and, you know, green beans, and it's got to be weighed on the scale.
Kind of sounds like seeing that message was almost like, well, easy for you to say. Like, you know, who do you think you are telling people this?
Right.
You don't get it.
Right.
You don't understand. It's not that easy.
Right. Which is the same look that my clients give me when I say, you know, they'll say, well, I want to get rid of this right here. And they kind of want me to give them, you know, what foods they should eat. And I told someone this week, I'm not going to tell you what to eat. Like, and some people, I don't tell them the whole story because I know they're not ready for it yet, because I wasn't ready at that point either. If Lauren would have lectured me about it, then I would have been like, you know,
right.
No, that's not for me. You're wrong. You have to come about it in your own natural progression. Like, I just got sick of weighing my food and logging everything into my Fitness Pal. It took so much brain power and time, and my whole life was starting to just be centered around food and exercise. And when I opened my own business, it kind of gradually changed because I was busy. Like, we transformed our whole space. You know, I was marketing to clients. I was doing business things that you don't think about.
You're like, I just didn't have the brain space to do that anymore.
And I didn't
have that control.
And then eventually I just didn't want to. And I do trust myself with food. Like, I will tell my clients, like, I'm not a food snob, because they'll be like, oh, I had beer last night, just one. Like, I really don't care. You know, you do you. Do what you need. And I do the same thing. So that's kind of how it started. And it's just like the feeling of freedom once you don't have to do that stuff anymore is amazing. Like, you just have so much more time.
How has your personal journey, you know, affected how you train your clients now and how you manage a fitness studio?
So my studio is, I think from attending other studios, I think it's super welcoming. And I was thinking this morning about how, if I were to choose a theme for my studio, it would be honor your body. Like, I will give instructions. I will tell them what the plan is for the day. But if they end up doing a different exercise that feels better to them, most of the time I'll ask them, like, did the other exercise not feel okay? And they'll be like, no, I just wanted to do this. And that's fine. Like, they're getting there. They're moving. Most of my clients, well, I won't say most, but some of my clients won't get their workouts otherwise. They are not gym rats. They are busy people that have very busy, high-pressured lives. You know, they need someone to tell them what to do for 30 minutes or an hour and not get injured. So safety, honoring your body. We don't always go like balls to the wall. We have easy days, and they're allowed to take them whenever they want. So I feel like that is kind of where my gym and philosophy have gone, which I love. And I mean, the right people are coming, and it's working out.
I love that you say kind of the right people, right? It's not that your gym is exclusive, right? But it's, we've talked a lot about on the podcast about finding a space that protects your mental space,
right,
in the fitness industry. So tell us about, I mean, do you have kind of diversity in your studio, or what else is going on that makes people feel like, oh, this is not intimidating. I can make those decisions to modify or change it up based on what I need and not feel pressured or guilty about it.
Yeah. I do think there is diversity in my studio. There could always be more. I'm open to anyone coming in. And that's kind of, you know, in the neighborhood that I'm in, I really want that. I want it to be accessible to everyone, cost-wise. You know, if I have a client that's been training with me for a while and they have a bad month financially, I have gifted them, you know, a month to keep them going. And I feel so great that I can do that. And I don't know exactly. I feel like just having a space where someone knows your name, you know, the same people, you know, I think I have about 150 clients now, but they usually come at the same times. So you're going to see the same faces each time, and they've really gotten to know each other. We've had tragedies with the people, with me and the people at my gym, and we've grown really close through those. So my daughter had cancer last year, and
You celebrated something recently, though. Share where she's at now and how she's doing.
Yeah, so she just had her 6-month checkup, and all of her scans are clear, and her blood work was good. So
Yay.
It seems like we're good. So that's exciting. But it was a hard, and we got lucky, really. Like, if you want to say, like, we got the good cancer, that's kind of what I say, because hers could be way worse. There are children with way worse. You know, she's 10. She just turned 10. She got it when she was 9. And, yeah, I just feel blessed that it was only 6 months. You know, it was hard enough at that.
What was that like when you guys got that message and, you know, in terms of just your family, but, you know, also as a business owner and you're in the spot of taking care of so many people, what was that like?
Oh, they took care of me. They did. It was really hard.
We don't have tissues. We need tissues in here. I have goosebumps. But yeah, so they took care of you. Kind of, it was like the role shifted a little bit.
Yes. So I put out the news. They knew that we were taking her to the ER. But I put out the news on the page, you know, the day that it happened. We have a private Facebook group. And I had recently, about 2 months or a month before that, hired another instructor. So I had yoga instructors, but I didn't have trainers until a month before, maybe 2 months. So luckily, like, that was in place. And she took over any of the classes that she could. And everyone obviously was super understanding. We were in the hospital for a week the first time when she had her tumor removed. And then we went home. We had to go back 2 weeks later for her first chemo. So that was 5 days of hospital, 2 weeks at home, where we still had a home nurse coming. And you know, you just do what you have to do in those situations. I don't know where the strength came from, but it was there. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't it just amazing, just the timing? I think, not to get too religious, but God's timing of everything, right? Like, just the fact that you had hired somebody and that you were at this place, you know, where you were able to step away. You know, if you were at your other job, you may not have had that ability to be there with your family and go through that. So kind of going through that process and, you know, taking care of her and healing, what are some of the ways that her story kind of impacted how you ran your studio?
I'm just more compassionate, you know, of course. I feel like, I guess I should say I'm compassionate with boundaries, because I think boundaries are essential. But
what do you mean by boundaries?
You know, just making sure that people don't do, you don't let people do things to you that make you resentful and angry. Mm-hmm. I think that this was something I was thinking about this morning. Boundaries, I feel like, are the number one reason that most women don't hit their fitness goals, mm-hmm. because they're too busy caring about other people and they're putting themselves last. And if someone says, hey, mom, I have to do this, you'd have to drive me, then they cancel their workouts. And as a business owner, I have to have boundaries too. You know, even though I am compassionate, I've learned that I get mad if I let people cross my boundaries. Like, you know, and I've stopped doing that for the most part, even with a little confrontation. You know, like, I feel better when I enforce my boundaries and what I need from people. And then eventually they either move on or they stop trying to cross your boundaries. Mm-hmm. I think that is actually probably the best thing that I have found in the last year. Because in the beginning, I was just really wanting all the clients. And now I've gotten to a point where I talked with my business coach where I'm just wanting to maintain. I'm not really trying to look for new clients right now. I don't want to lose the personal feel of my gym. And there is a point where there's a fine line, you know. So, yeah, I feel like I'm more compassionate, and I've learned a lot about myself through cancer, but also just as being, you know, in the last 2 years of being a business owner.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you had to let go of or shift your thinking, you know, in terms of food and exercise, especially going through that season with your family?
Well, food was definitely a challenge. People were bringing us food. There was a meal train. You know, there was a lot of fast food near the hospital. The hospital had a salad bar, but it really wasn't that great. So food definitely kind of, I have to not be a perfectionist about food during that time. And I was fine with that. Like, there were bigger fish to fry. And I still was pretty active. My husband and I, we both have our own businesses. So he would stay at the hospital for, you know, a lot of the time while I was working and trying to run my business, because his schedule is more flexible. So I would go into work and I was able to get movement in. You know, when I work, I get like 20,000 steps a day. Like, I am moving nonstop at work. So I was able to do that. And then there were a few days where I stayed at the hospital and one of the nurses let me into the stairwell to run for 15 minutes, and then she let me back out. I was trapped in there. She's like, you're going to have to call me because you can't get out of the stairwell on this floor or anywhere. You can't get out of the stairwell.
That's so sweet.
So I would run stairs. And then there was also, it was summer, so there was a park across from the hospital. And occasionally I would walk through the neighborhood and through that park. But I didn't like to leave the hospital when I was there. We didn't like to leave her alone. So for the most part, I got my activity when I was at work, and I just made sure I got it in. And it became, you know, that much more important. Like, I want a healthy daughter. I'm going to do whatever I can do to stay healthy for her. Mm-hmm. So
I love that mindset shift. And you talk about just movement and the activity that you did choose, right? It was starting to look at exercise as more of a form of self-care.
Right.
I don't really care what I do, how much I do it. Like, I just need to move my body because I know how it makes me feel. And like you said, how much stronger I need to be in this moment.
My body hurt so bad at the hospital too. I mean, we slept on a couch that, you know, folded out, the two of us, a lot of the time. And my upper back, my neck, my lower back, all of it hurt when I didn't move. And still, when I don't move, I have body pain. So I have to move. That's just me. Like, I will always move. But I do try to, same thing with, you know, as I do with food. Lately, I haven't been lifting because I had a neck thing. So I was just being nice to myself and doing cardio and weights and only doing cardio and yoga and only doing what felt good. Mm-hmm. So I really learned in the past year a lot about being nice to myself.
And what a shift from where you've been, right? Of having so much rigidity and structure and discipline. It's almost like, you know, I always tell clients, yeah, sure, aim for 6-7 days of activity, you know, because life will give you rest days.
Right. And yeah. Or if you don't get those rest days, your body will make you.
I feel
like when I have pain, it's for a reason. Like, the last time I had neck pain, it was because I wasn't drinking enough water. I you know, you have to be a body detective. I wasn't drinking enough water. I was working more than I normally do and should. And I was hunched at my desk a lot. So I was having a neck and trapezius, you know, like, so I fixed those things, you know, and went back to my normal. And then the pain was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like amazing how you do have the power to change how your body feels in like a matter of 4 days, you know, for me.
I love that word, body detective.
Yeah.
What are some other ways that you are a body detective for yourself?
Oh, you know, like, even though I do love my body and eat intuitively, I always have, not always, but I sometimes have days where I will be more bloated, you know, like, it's that time of the month, or maybe I ate some beans, which I love beans, so, but they always make you bloated. So figuring out, like, well, why do I feel this way today? Well, it's because I had beans, and beans naturally make you bloated. Things like that. Sleeping, I think that sometimes it can cause me pain because I sleep with like one knee up and my hip all, you know, torqued.
Crazy.
And so, yeah, just taking the time to notice instead of rush, 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 I'm busy, which I've tried to stop saying completely. Like, I know that I have the choice in life. And I think that's empowering. It's, you know, like, when you are in charge of your schedule, you're in charge of how you, what you put into your body, how you move your body. I think it's like the most empowering thing that, you know, finally at 42, I have found. Even after, you know, I had the ideal, you know, lean mass, you know, like that, I still wasn't happy at that point. And so finding balance and noticing my feelings around my body and eating and all of those things.
It sounds like connecting the dots in different ways, right? From physically, mentally, emotionally versus what else is going on, right? And really putting the pieces together to understand your body best.
Yeah. So I just thought of this. At my studio, I have stopped sharing before and afters. And so...
Interesting. Tell us more.
So with intuitive eating, you know, I'm trying to contribute a lot less to diet culture where I notice it. Sometimes you don't notice it. And so I've noticed that before and after sometimes make me feel, you know, like comparison. And not only with other people, but when I see my bodybuilding photos, I looked at some last week, I feel like sometimes I should still be that way, you know? And so I decided to stop sharing before and after photos of my clients because I don't want people to compare themselves to themselves or other people. Mm-hmm. And even though it's like pretty much like bank when you share them, like intuitive eating is so unsexy, you know?
Not at all.
Right? Like, hey, Katie, give me 6 weeks and you're going to look like this. You're going to be lean. You're going to look mean. Or give me 6 months and you're going to trust yourself. Like, which one? You know, but in the long story, you really want body trust, I'll tell you from experiencing it.
I love that you are just setting that expectation as a business owner in the fitness industry because, like you just said, right, transformation photos sell.
Right.
Weight loss sells.
Right.
Physique sells. And
booty pictures.
Right. And for you to take a step back and go, no, I'm not putting that out there because I know how that makes a certain person feel. And it sounds like you've recognized, well, if somebody comes for me just for weight loss or just because of that picture that they saw, they may not be the person that I need to serve anyways.
They're not going to share my philosophy. You know, like it's not the right person. And even like in my studio, you know, I have a client that she lost a lot of weight in a year. She did it. It was long, you know, but then something traumatic happened, just like in my life. You know, something happened that she had to deal with that. She did not need to be thinking about how much food she's putting on her plate. And so she regressed or she, you know, she gained some of the weight back. I hate saying it in a negative way because that's what she needed to do to get through that really hard time. Mm. And so if her picture was still up on my wall, she's coming in every night. I can't imagine how that makes someone feel, especially like looking at my own photos. So I had my clients send me photos of them in their happiest moments, and I hung those on my bulletin board instead.
That gives you goosebumps, and I love that you recognize that because that's not even something that I would have thought of, but that's natural, I mean, human instinct, right? You've seen this picture of this person on the wall. Now, let's say it's another gym goer, right? And now they see that person, and they can't help but think, oh, they're different than they were, right? And you and I can recognize, well, maybe it's because of other things going on in their life. But somebody who's not at the place that we are, they say, oh, my gosh, did you see how much weight they gained,
right?
And how, not humiliating, but not helpful to that client who went through that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So when you don't know someone's story, I don't think, you know, you need to, like, even now when I see people, like, that are smaller, like, I won't say, like, oh, you look great. Like, you know, like, maybe they're sick. Maybe they have cancer. My daughter lost a ton of weight when she got cancer. We couldn't figure out what was going on. Like, of course, that's drastic. But I just don't even comment anymore on bodies because you don't know their story.
But it's so true. I mean, you look at your daughter, like, right before she didn't look sick.
Right.
Yeah, you know?
She was just bloated. Yeah.
Right.
We kept thinking, why is her belly getting so big? And this is sad. She said to my husband, she said, well, I guess I'm just more fat than the other kids at school. And she's like a little, like my daughter is not, but that kind of language is already happening at my daughter's school too. She told me recently about how all the kids at school just want to be skinny. Mm-hmm. And that's part of my why, you know, like I don't want my daughter talking like that or thinking those things. I don't want my daughter to have to weigh all of her foods when she gets older. Like, I want her to just, like, live life and be happy, be smart, be strong, whatever she needs, you know? And I think that, I don't think my parents brought me up that way, but, you know, I definitely had all the fashion magazines. I was obsessed with some supermodels for a while, and I wanted to be just like them. And so I want my daughter to hopefully not get a lot of that from home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's everywhere else.
Right. That is, unfortunately, our society. And I think you and I are part of that mission of, you know, collaborating, not competing, of like, how can we just change the fitness industry?
Right.
So tell us, I know you've done some other kind of exciting, fun programming and things that you've done, like, with your daughter in mind.
Well, we did do an event last year on Mother's Day. Yeah, it was a Strong Like a Mother. And it was actually my daughter had been going through chemo, so she still had her hair, but she was there. She participated a little bit, but she didn't have a ton of energy. But we had about 25 moms and kids total, maybe 25 to 30. The gym was packed. And so we all worked out. It was really fun. It was great. And the kids were asking, like, when they were driving out, like, when are we doing that again? And we are going to do that again in May. I'll have it again. And I'm sure it'll sell out just like it did last year. It was great.
I love that that's part of your why, because, you know, we're talking about just longevity and sustainability when it comes to moving your body and right. eating well. And I think your daughter's story, like, just solidified kind of your purpose for moving right. forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about you taking this more, you know, intuitive, non-diet approach. What do you think are some of the challenges with taking this approach as a fitness professional in this industry?
Well, that there's no concrete answer for people. I mean, people want you to tell them what to do sometimes, not all the time, or they do until they don't.
Right.
But yeah, it's hard to explain intuitive eating and fullness cues and trusting your body. And it really takes a lot of work. It's taken me a year to kind of get to where I am now. And, you know, at first I was against it. And then I still slowly started considering. So it's just not a fast track. And that is really hard for some people to swallow. Mm-hmm. So again, like, you know, I might not have as many clients as I would if I were promising a 6-week fat loss plan for spring break, but that's okay. But I think that that's the hardest thing about it is that many people don't want to take the time to slow down because they're busy, busy, busy. We've mm-hmm. glorified being busy in our society, and that's what it takes.
But at the same time, it's funny that people don't want to slow down because at the same time we blink and it's been a year.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's why your why, right? And your right. purpose is so important because that's what keeps you going forward of,
right.
Wait a second. What's shiny? What's, right. you know, what's sexy and going to sell versus what's actually going to change people's life?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you find are some of the biggest struggles with your clients that they deal with right now?
I mean, I'm just going to go back to boundaries, like getting there, because a lot of women are taking care of other people and that it's just so hard for them to put themselves first without guilt. You know, like you can and should be healthy for your kids and family or whoever it is. So I think that's the hardest thing is that whenever someone doesn't continue at my studio, it boils down to boundaries and letting their barriers determine whether they're going to be there, whether it's mentally or physically. And I think that the victim mindset really sometimes bothers me with clients because even when Avery had cancer, I knew that I had the power to do what I needed. Sometimes that took a lot of juggling mm-hmm. and it was never easy. But yeah, if I could get movement, I would. And I had a choice. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you give up, like when you say this is how it is, that just stops you in your fitness tracks, health and wellness tracks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how it is. You always have a choice.
I talk a lot about that on the podcast, of this fine line between giving yourself grace and having compassion, but then also excuses or right. barriers or challenges. So I love that you talk about that. It's another word for boundaries, right? Boundaries versus what are you going to tolerate and what's going to keep you back from your goals. I love that.
And I think that the more you self-coach yourself, the better, because sometimes I don't want to go to the gym. I'm sure you know. You know, like this Saturday, I drove across town to go to a gym where no one knew me because I didn't want to see anyone at the gym. And it took me like steps of like, I'm going to go clean out my car. Then I'm going to decide which gym to go to. Then I'm going to, you know, I went to actually two gyms that morning because one was too full. But, you know, like, it's self-coaching. Like, it's a skill. Like, you can use it anywhere for any subject, job, fitness, whatever. And I utilize that quite a bit. And I try to tell my clients that, like, you know, if you're doing something really hard and it's intense, that's okay. Try to push through to the end of the set or the end of the time period if you can. But if you're in pain and it just feels horrible, give yourself some grace. Go heavier on something else that you can, you know, you can push it in. It's always a juggling act and balance. Yeah.
I love that self-coaching. What I tell my clients is almost like, imagine you've got a friend or, you know, like you've got a daughter or a niece or somebody that you care about. It's like, what would you tell them? Right. You wouldn't let them off the hook.
Right.
But you'd also talk to them with kindness. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think that's a skill that that we all have within us innately and intuitively. But it's, how can we tap more into that that positive, that encouraging voice inside of our head?
Yeah. I think it's hard, too, as a fitness and wellness professional, finding that line with each client. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you'll have people that have their barriers come up. And I'm not going to say excuses because I think that's a bad word. Mm-hmm. But they're barriers.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out, like, do I bring this to their attention and have them hate me for today? You know, in a nice way. But still, when someone tells me, you know, maybe you should start working a little bit less and your neck wouldn't hurt. Like, you know, like, sometimes I'll listen and sometimes I'll be like, why are you bossing me around? But these people do actually pay me to give
right
advice. So, but it's still a fine line. You know, I think that, since I have a coach, I would rather her tell me, like, you know, maybe this isn't the right Instagram post for the clients that you want to attract. You know, I'd rather her tell me, but not everyone wants that. So there's so much psychology to personal training and coaching.
We were just talking about this before we started recording, just so much they don't teach us that you learn with experience and years.
And self-development. I mean, you know, like the way that I coach now versus the way that I coached 2 to 3 years ago is drastically different. And it's because of, you know, life and experiencing all the things.
Right. And I think we're always learning and we're always, you know, learning both individually, right? Like you said, with self-development and things that we've invested in ourselves, our own experiences, but also from the experiences of others, right? And kind of learning from our own clients and what's worked and what hasn't worked.
Right. Yeah.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years? It's wild to think that you've only had your studio for 2 years and it's not where you thought it would be. So, you know, what's kind of your long-term goal?
I think long-term, I really want to continue my business, brick and mortar. So having a staff that I trust and still teaching, because I love teaching classes and I love being with people. Every time I have a good class, like last night, class was so great that I did a high kick, you know, and then other clients decided to try high kick. So I just have so much fun working with people that I never want to just only be behind a computer, but I do want to start doing more online coaching so I can help reach people that aren't in Indianapolis or maybe that just can't come to my gym. They'd rather do stuff at home and that want to learn body trust. Mm-hmm. Also, I have recently stopped drinking, so it's been like 65 days and I kind of just decided like I'm going to go alcohol free for December and it kept going because I was using it as kind of a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. So I think that I also will end up kind of going into that a little bit. I'm not a therapist, but I think that a group support is a huge, you know, like help. And so I kind of would like to do coaching around that as well with workouts, body trust, all encompassing. So
I love that you recognize it was a coping mechanism and it's not serving me. So let's explore other ways that I can better deal with or navigate what I'm going through.
Right.
So creating a space where more people can be a part of that community that you've created in here in Indianapolis. So you've started this small group coaching. If people want to find you who are listening to the podcast in Ireland or that's what I found. We are ranked number 5
really
in
cool.
Ireland as of this morning. I thought, Ireland, I see you. So wherever you're listening on the podcast, where is the best place for people to find you?
www.trivergencetraining.com is my website. And that has stuff about coaching, about in-person stuff. Yeah, check in the website. I'm also on Instagram. It's trivergence_training and Facebook as well.
All the places.
Yeah. I don't do Twitter. I don't do TikTok. I don't know if I'll ever get into either one of those. So
don't start TikTok. It's addicting.
Really?
It is like, I don't know. For me, do you watch Ellen show at all?
Not lately. I don't watch very much TV now.
I know. But when I do, or her YouTube channel, it's like you get stuck and then it's a loop, right? Then it starts playing one that don't start. Let your kids stay on TikTok.
Yeah.
We don't need to be on there. So last question, because I always love to finish with this. Tell us, what's the best thing that's happened to you this week? It's only Tuesday, so we can include last week.
Yeah, I mean, I try to enjoy something from every day. So like, my not drinking 65 days. And also I'm starting to try new studios, which I think is really fun to be a client. So that's really awesome. I've had a client tell me this week, well, she was talking to another client, a new client, and she said, schedule your sessions early because all the classes fill up, and especially Jessica's, which is kind of nice to hear. My instructors are good, but like it made me feel special. Yeah, there's a lot of things that are good in every day, and I just try to, it's not a really huge thing, but those are things that I can think of right off the bat.
I love that. Not even week to week, day to day. Celebrate the small wins and gratitude in every day.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
It has been such a joy, and I'm excited to just see what this, it's only February.
I know.
But I'm excited to see where 2020 takes you.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
I'm hitting my goals already. So one of my goals was to get a certain elliptical with a certain program on it into my studio. And it ended up happening before January even started. So that was super, I already crossed off that on the vision board. So I'm really goal-oriented, and I'm super excited to see what happens this year.
Love it. Momentum.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.